Okay, we're going to start here on the mission on the bottom of Chav Chedem Bet. Mishnah says, "Anotel schar liot ru'et habichorot." Someone who takes compensation for seeing mumim in a bechor, in shochatim al piv. We do not check the bechorim based on that. Elim kein hu mumcha ki ilo biyavna. Unless he's a mumcha like ilo biyavna, shehi tirulo chachamim liot notel arba isarot lebehem adaka, and he was able to take payment of 40 sarot for every behemoth daka, v'shisha l'gasa, ben tam uvein malmum. It was irrespective of what the outcome is. There was, seems to be an alternative girsa in the Mishnah, and you can see that in Rashi, in the Divrei Matkil, says ben amar lehem that it was a mum kavua, ben amar lehem she was a mum over, or ben tam, but ben mum kavua, some sort of variation of that sort. The idea being that the problem with taking compensation for seeing a mum was, they used to only get compensated if they found a mum. If they didn't find a mum, they were not compensated. Therefore, it incented the mumche to find a mum. So that's why we have the beginning of the Mishnah, which is an hotel schar liot ru'et habechorot, ein shochatim al piv, because we don't trust them. If he's only getting paid to see the mum, then that might alter his view about what exactly is a mum. The only time they did was they were matir like Ila, who was accepted, who got paid, whether he saw a tam, or whether he saw a bal mum. Irrespective of what he found, he got paid, which is important because then he doesn't have any bias towards coming out and saying that it has a mum. But then you do have another problem, which the Gemara will address in a second, which is then he has an incentive the other way. He's incented to make sure that it doesn't have a mum, because if that's the case, they'll have to bring him the behema over and over again. He'll get paid multiple times instead of getting paid once. So Gemara says, "My time, oh." So the question here of the Gemara is, how come there's a difference in the compensation between a behema daka and a behema gasa? Gemara says, "Hai nafish tirchei, b'hai lo nafish tirchei." It's pretty straightforward. It's more work to deal with a behema gasa than it is to deal with a behema daka. When you have to deal with putting it down on the ground, searching its entire body, whatever it is that you have to do, it's always more work when it comes to a behema gasa. Therefore, you took more compensation for it. Ben tam uvein balmum. Bishlam balmum shum dekos sharilei. Okay, I understand why he got paid for a balmum, because then it was matir. Ela tam amai. Why does he get paid for saying that it's a tam? When it says, game kain atu the michshadeh. Because if he didn't get paid for saying that it was a tam, then they would be choshed him. Because they would say that, hai balmum tamhu, it's really a tam. But hai dekosharile, the reason he's being matirit and saying that it does have a mum is mishum agrok, to get paid. So we don't want him getting paid just for a mum, we want him getting paid on both sides. So we say, the Mar says, yochi tam nami amre. But at the time, they're also going to say, balmumhu, it's really a balmum, but hai dekosharile. I got paid multiple times. If I say it's a tam, they're going to have to bring the animal to me again when they see there is a mum in it. Gemara answers, Chadazimno takinulei rabbanon. Trezimlei lo takinulei rabbanon. He got paid once per animal, no matter what he saw. So therefore, if he saw that it was a mum in it, he got paid. If he saw that there was a tam, he got paid. But if he got said that it was a tam and they have to bring it back another time, he did not get paid another time. He got paid once for that animal until there was a mum in it. Now, that does create some of a problem, because then he would not want to deal with it again. And that's what Tosot asked. If he only gets paid once per animal, then he'd rather get see it the first time and be done with it than have the guy bring it back three times until he finds a mum in it. It's extra work for him. It means he get not every time that he sees an ant, this animal again, he's not getting paid for it. Chachamim didn't demand that he see it again. But if he did see it, he wouldn't be able to take compensation for it. Because then it wouldn't be a problem. They didn't obligate him to see it again. They didn't say you have to see it the second time if he brings it back. Just that if he did see it, he wasn't able to take schar from it. He would get no benefit from it. Right, so that's what Tosfos is suggesting, that this person could take it to another mumcha and he could see it. And over here, there was no obligation for him to see it again. It's just that if he did see it, he wasn't allowed to take compensation. And therefore, he might just say, no, I don't want to see it. And then they would go to another mumcha. But he would not have any benefit from seeing it another time. And therefore, a tam or mum for him, it was irrelevant to what he said because he got compensated in either way. And that way, he took away the aspect of chshad over here. Took away the problem of people having or saying that he was biased towards whether it was a bal mum or towards a tam. We tried to eliminate that entirely. All right, next Mishnah. Someone who takes compensation to judge, dinav b'teilim, then his adjudication is worthless because he took money or compensation for it. Lehaid, he took money to testify, edutav b'teilim, then all of his testimony is nullified. Lehazot ulekadesh, if he takes money to be mazeh, the waters of the Paraduma, or to me kadesh them, to put the ashes into the water, meimav meimeara, then the waters are like regular water, efro efer makle, and the ashes are like regular ashes. It's as if nothing happened, as if he did nothing. It's water that's not ro'ui for being mekadesh the Paraduma in it. Because there you need maim chayim, and meimeara is still water. That still water is not re'uya for the kiddush of the mei para. I mean, I don't know if you have to say necessarily that it's negative, that mei me'ara, because they do it, they are stationary, they are mei seruchim as well. You could say that, but I'm not sure you have to say that, because efro efer makle just means it's regular ashes. It doesn't have the status of what you're trying to create over here. Imaya kohen, mitemeyu mitrumato, if he is a kohen, and he caused him, because of whatever necessity over here for him to be involved in something, he made him tamei, and he can't eat his truma now. So now he's out. Truma is much cheaper. It's something that he can eat. Either he gets it for free, or he can purchase it at a very low price. Then the person who caused him to be tamei, because he needed him, then machilo, umashko, visacho, then he could feed him, give him to drink, anoint him, take care of him, because otherwise he's out money. So here you can compensate him for losses. What you can't do is pay him for his services. If he's an elderly gentleman, you can put him on a chamor to transport him to where you need him. Again, this is just making it accessible to him, not that you're compensating for what he does. And you can pay him like a poel. And we'll have to understand what that means in terms of paying him like a poel, because again, what is allowed is you're allowed to compensate for losses, you're not allowed to pay them for services. So again, paying him like a poel has to be that you're compensating for some loss, which the Gemara discussed, what is the loss that he's incurring over here? So, menahani mile. Where do we know the fact that you're not allowed to take compensation for the services of judging? So, Amar Yud, Amar Rav, Amar Kuro. But the Hasuk says, Moshe re'eit limareti etchem, chukim u'mushvatim. So he says that I taught you these laws, I taught you this Torah. Ma'ani bichinam, afatem bichinam. Just like I, Moshe says, I'm for free. Afatem bichinam. So too, you have to teach for free. Tanya nami ochi. We have a similar thing in the Braita. Kasher tzivani Hashem Elokai. Ma'ani bichinam, afatem bichinam. Just like Hashem commanded me. Man, he commanded me to teach you the Torah. And since he commanded me to teach the Torah, and I wasn't getting any compensation for that service of teaching you the Torah, so to over here, you have to then pass it along in the same manner that the Mesorah has to pass along bechinam for free. Hey, what happens if an individual wants to learn Torah and he can't find it, that nobody will teach him for free? That he'll have to pay for it. How do we know that you have to expend money in order to get Torah? Talmud Omer, emet knei. Emet, referring to Torah, Kenei, you're going to have to purchase. You might expend money in order to get to Emet, to get to the Torah. How do we know that you can't say, just like I had to expend money to learn Torah, now I'll charge others to teach them or to learn from me? Talmud Omer, Emet Kenei, Ve'altimkor, that you have to purchase it, but don't sell it. I mean, that you're under an obligation to acquire Torah at any cost, but you cannot then pass along the Torah and give it over just because someone else did it incorrectly. Doesn't mean you should do it incorrectly. You have to pass it on, bechinam, like it was originally supposed to be, which is that Torah is taught for free without any compensation. Now, Tosfos would ask the question, why do I need this? Ma'ani b'chinam, afatem b'chinam. What happened to shochad lo tikach, v'shochad yaver inei chachamim, yisalef divrei tzadikim, v'la pirchahi? Says, that's not a question. D'trei milei ninu. We're talking about two different things. Because b'torat agra hainu skar tircho, u'b'torat shochad hainu lishtadel ladono yafeh, v'lapoch b'schutei. Shochad, bribery, graft, is where you're trying to influence the outcome of the decision. So when you say lo tikach shochad, that says don't pay in order to have undue influence over the outcome of the case. Over here, our Gemara is suggesting an hotel scharola dun has nothing to do with shochad over here. It's not that you're compensating him to favor your side in the case. You're paying him, period. You cannot get paid for providing this service, even in an even case, where both parties are paying him. This is about simply receiving compensation, nothing to do with influence on the case. This is payment for services versus payment to influence the case. Shochad is a sore because you're influencing the case, period. It has nothing to do with, again, compensating him for his services. This is compensating for his service, nothing to do with influencing the case. And therefore, the Gemara here is looking for a different reason why it's a sore. It's a sore because you're not allowed to compensate for these services. But then, Tosfot discusses the other issue, which is vainly tmoa, a dayane gzirot yibirushalayim. We have that in the last parak in Ketubot. They used to pay the dayanim of gzirot in Yerushalayim, sheyunot limskaram mitrumat alishka. They used to get paid out of the trumat alishka. They used to get paid out of public funds for providing that service. So, beloved time of the agar batlo, the mukhach shari. So even without the reason of foregone wages, we know that it's mutar, hatam, kevin to call asakam hava azeh. Because they dedicated their whole life to this. Below your skin b'shum b'lacha. They didn't do anything else. Shal korcham tzrichim li'itparnes. We can't ask them to service the community and then have them have no money, no way to get parnasa, and say, sure, you gotta go and you gotta be down the community. And, your own family? Don't worry about it. But you can't say that to someone. Mash no agim achshav, l'mod torah b'schar, im ein lo b'meli parnes shari. Tosa says today, or it should really be l'amid, but there today where people teach only for compensation, and if he has nothing else, if there's no other way to make a parnasa, that's mutar. V'afili yeshlo, even if he does have another way to make a parnasa, if it's because he is foregoing that other compensation, foregoing that other work, the muchav shemina kol asakav umasa matan shelo, and he gives up all other business, mistaver the choshiv muchav yoter mikarno, which is the case in Ketubot, the tayhar chama v'shakel zuza, that he used to allow his wine went bad, and he took money or compensation for the fact that he didn't get involved with his wine. Va'od, and in addition to that, the biktanim shori. By youngsters, it's mutar mitam shimur uschar pisuk tamim. Kedemuchach beperek in ben moder in the darim, it says that you could take compensation for teaching youngsters because you're babysitting. You have to take money for the babysitting in pisuk tamim. Not for teaching the Torah, but how to read. You're teaching them how to read the text, how to lean. Those aspects of it you can take compensation for. Tosafot is trying to deal with this or balance this issue between you can't take compensation versus we're asking people to give of themselves to the tzibur, and if we don't compensate them, then how are we going to ask them? How can we ask of them to give up everything else in order to service the tzibur? So therefore he comes up with number one, if you have no other panasan, you dedicate your entire life to the tzibur, then we have to give you compensation. Because it's just not fair that we don't compensate you. Forgetting about Tzchar Batala. Over here, we're not allowing you the opportunity to have any other parnasa. And that's Dayane Gzeirot Yerushalayim. Someone who has no other opportunity to be parnes. So in those cases, since they've dedicated their entire lives to the teaching of Torah, to the Tzibur, we will have to compensate them. And then he says today that we pay people could be for one of two reasons. Either they're giving up the alternative opportunities that they have, and therefore we're compensating them for that, or they're dealing with youngsters, and with youngsters you can pay them for the babysitting services, you can pay them for teaching them how to read, teaching them how to punctuate the psukim, so on and so forth. That you can pay them for, because that's not about learning the Torah, directly learning Torah. That's about things that are around or surround the ability of this individual to learn Torah. So that's what over here is both justifying the practice in the time of the Chachamim, as well as the practice in his time, to the Tzibur would compensate people.
The problem is that the good thing, the paradigm, moral problem.
Right, so that's the Rambam writes here. The Rambam found in Masechet Avot, Perek Dalet, Mishnah Hey. Actually, in the Rambam, it's Mishnah Vav. So Rambam in Hilchot Talmud Torah, it's Perek Gimel Halacha Yud, and there the Rambam writes strongly, very strongly, against people who are matil etzmam al tzibur, people who expect to be compensated from public funds, who learn Torah, who teach Torah, and expect that the tzibur should support them. And he speaks very vehemently against it, both as being a bizui mitzvah, about, he goes through all the Tanaim and Amoraim, tons of them, and shows how they all had alternative jobs, they had alternative occupations, and that they did not take compensation from the tzibur, and they did not take compensation for their Torah. They worked at something else, and they took compensation for that. Not even Skar B'Tela. They worked on their own, and they took compensation, and he's adamant about this, and against taking compensation at all for teaching Torah, for servicing the public, and that he believes that everybody had to be mitparnes on their own. They had to take care of their own parnosa. This Rambam stands out against everything, almost everything that we do when it comes to Torah and compensating for people teaching Torah, going into chinuch, and so on and so forth. Now the Rambam, but this is a dat yochid, a lot of people take him to task on this, including there's a very large Tshuvat HaTashbetz, wrote pages and pages on this issue, trying to argue against the Rambam. One of the things that you have to know about the Rambam is that it's not so simple. The Rambam himself was supported by his brother. We have letters from the Rambam that says that his younger brother David was a merchant who supported him and his family, and that's how the Rambam sat and learned. He did not have a job, and he was not getting compensated by the tzibur. He made the money that he had was from his brother who was out working. Only much later in life. His brother was out on business. He leaves on business. There's a letter from the Cairo Geniza now that was found. A letter, what seems to be the last letter from his brother David back to the Rambam himself, saying that unfortunately he was not successful. He's in some Sudanese port. He was not successful in bringing wares, and therefore he's making the decision to go on with, like the other merchants, on to India in order to bring back some other products. It was a very lucrative route, but also very dangerous. And the Rambam was very against his brother going. He had told them that before he had left. So his brother's writing to convince him that it's okay, it's alright. He goes, and his boat sinks. And he dies in a boat accident going out towards India, and was not heard from. He left behind a wife and a young orphan child. And he left basically his family, not only the Rambam, the entire Maimon family, in trouble, because they had all invested with him, and he was basically the main breadwinner for their entire family. So they were left to poverty. The Rambam writes in a letter to his friend in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Eliyahu Adayan Bar Yefet. He writes to him that he, for over a year, he was in bed, and that he couldn't get out of bed over the sorrow about his brother. Sounds like he was in depression about the loss of his brother. And he talks about how he really couldn't get out of bed. He finally, the Rambam, was forced, because of that, to take on a profession in order to support himself. And that's when he becomes a doctor. He learns the medical profession and only becomes a doctor then in order to support his family, because he had no other means of compensation, no other means of support. He had lost that with his brother. And so therefore he goes ahead and learns the trade of being a doctor and eventually rises to be the doctor of the Sultan in Egypt, which ended up helping out many Jews and himself in terms of his stature amongst the Jews, as well as his ability to help Jews around the world. But the Rambam was not originally a doctor and was not originally working. So you have to look at the Rambam's words in that context, which is that he originally did get funds from someone else. Now you could differentiate, and it's important to differentiate over here. Number one is that the Rambam had a agreed and a consensual partnership with his brother, which is that his brother went out to work and he helped, he took the Rambam's money, he invested the Rambam's money, he took care of him. And therefore, the Rambam was supported by his brother, but his brother wanted to do that. It was a Yisachar Zvulun setup, which the Rambam also praises in other places. This is the idea of Yisachar Zvulun, but that's a consensual agreement between them. That's number one. Right, that's also right. Two individuals, we're not talking about the Tzibur. And on top of that, the experience of the Rambam might have influenced what he wrote as well, which is that he might have wrote so strongly against it because of what happened to him, how he was left painless and without anything, and he had no means of supporting himself once his brother had died.
When did he write?
The Mishnah Torah was written later in his life. Although the Perush Mishnayot was written earlier in his life, so that was before his brother had died. The Perush Mishnayot was written much earlier in his life when he's still traveling, when his family's wandering around before they reach Egypt, so that's before the death of his brother, although Mishnah Torah is written later. So, I don't know if that's a fair assumption to say that he was so influenced by it. But there are many that take the Rambam to task. One of the major claims against the Rambam is, if we don't allow the Tzibur to support the Talmidei Chachamim, there won't be Talmidei Chachamim. That basically, without the support of the Tzibur, right, there is Eid Lasot Hashem, Aferu Torah Techa, but more importantly, that you cannot expect people to dedicate their lives to Torah without fair compensation, without the Tzibur supporting them, because Torah Mate Alea. What's going to happen to Torah if we don't support these people and we don't have Talmidei Chachamim? But again, over there, it might be different. The arguments there are for those that are unique stature, their unique abilities within Torah, and they're also servicing the tzibur as a tzibur as a whole. Again, it's not the idea of that here I'm going to learn and you will support me, but rather the tzibur needs, Talmidei Chachamim, the tzibur needs a certain amount of leadership in Torah. So they're willing to pay for that leadership. They're willing to compensate for that leadership. But not that everybody can make that decision about Matil Atzmal Tzibur and say, listen, I'm going to learn. It's your problem now. I think you can distinguish there. The later Achronim discuss, and the Ber Halacha brings this down. I think it's in Kuf Nun
Vav.
I can't remember. Where the Ber Halacha brings down, again, that the times have changed. And whereas in the olden days, a person was able to have a job where he'd work for a couple hours a day and receive compensation, and that was enough to live on. He could be mitzamzim mamuat, and then he could live off of that. Today, as the industrial age came about, and as times have moved along, it's very hard for people to support their families without taking a full-time job. You can't have these part-time jobs that work a couple hours a day and be sufficient like they did in the time of the Gemara. The other thing is the quantity of material that one has to cover. In the time of the Tanaim and the Amoraim, there was only the Mishnayot, the Braitot that they had to know. Today, the scope of Torah has expanded greatly, and therefore the amount of time needed to dedicate to know Torah is significantly greater. And based on those arguments, they say that we have to allow for this ability for people to take compensation, otherwise we can't have people dedicating their lives to Torah. Again, Torah Matei Aleha. Number two is we can't expect people to dedicate the amount of time they need to master the material if we're not willing to pay them. The question of being Matil Atzmo Tzibur still stands out, which is when it's consensual relationships, when it's a tzibur paying for a service, or it's a Yisachar Zvulun agreement where there's a consensual partnership, that might be one thing, where you make a demand on people to support individuals who are learning Torah, right? It might be a laudatory profession and pursuit. It's questionable whether you could force other people to support you in that pursuit unless there is some sort of agreement up front about why or who and how these individuals are compensated versus the needs of the tzibur. Right, I'll send that. I have the mikorot for this. I'll send you out the mikorot so you can take a look at them yourselves. All right, let's move on. Lazot ulekadesh b'meirav b'meara ifroi fer makle v'minu hamekadesh b'meichatat beifer chatat harizu mekudeshet. Someone who kiddushin, he wants to get married. With kiddushin, you need some sort of value to be given to the woman. And what's the value that he is providing over here? He's mekadesh b'meichatat beifer chatat. He's bringing her waters for the paraduma. He's bringing her the waters and putting the afer in for her. He's doing a service for her. He's getting compensated and waiving the compensation. That becomes his kesef kedushim or zeim kedushim. It works. Apple pishu Yisrael. Not only does it work for a kohen, but even for Yisrael. Yisrael is allowed to do this, even though kohanim are usually the ones who do it. But if Yisrael does it, also, he could have asked for compensation for what he did. And since he's asking for compensation for what he did, and he waives that compensation, he can use that as his kesef kedushim. Depends what you're getting compensated for. You can get compensated for anything that is not ritual. Anything that's part of the ritual itself, you cannot get compensated for. That's the schar hazaav v'kiddush. You can't get compensated for doing the sprinkling. You can't get compensated for putting the ashes into the water. What you can get compensated for is any work or any efforts that you have to make that are outside of the ritual aspect of this. Like bringing the water, carrying the water to the place that the person needs it, filling the water, drawing the water, things that are not a part of the, directly part of the mitzvah, but are outside the realm of the mitzvahs. Rashi terms them over here, that these are mashad mishkal agar tirche shakyo velo hechsher mitzvah. You can take any compensation for preparations, undertakings that allow the mitzvah to be done, but not anything that's a hechsher mitzvah, not anything that's involved in the absolute preparation of the mitzvah and the doing of the mitzvah, that you can't take compensation for. So that's the distinction we're going to draw over here. Gemara says, Deganami, you can take midayik that I've always said, Tani, Abala Zot Ulekadesh. What are the two operations, the two actions that the Mishnah uses as an example? It says, Bala Zot Ulekadesh. It talks about the ritual actions. And over there, it uses a different term. In our Mishnah, it uses the ritual things, which are the Hazaah and the Kiddush. Over there, it's being mikadesh b'mei chatat and b'efer chatat. What do you mean? With the waters of the chatat, with the efer of the chatat. Shmami, now over there, that we're talking about the work involved to make it accessible to the individual. This is over here, we're talking about, in our mission, the case of the ritual side of it, and that you cannot take compensation for. Now, im haya kohen, if he is a kohen, mitameu mitchumato. If he does make him tamei from his chuma, then he has to compensate him. So Gemara says, iu gufe echiyazil. How can he do this? The kohen himself, how can he become tamei? It's one thing, if you want to make him tamei in order to help you out, fine. But the kohen himself can't become tamei. He has an isor of becoming tamei tumatameit. So how could it be here that you're making him or forcing him to become tamei tumatameit and he'll just accept compensation and you paying him for his support? So when it says, we're here, we're talking about the beta pras dirabonon. Talking about a case where we're talking about a beta pras, which is only a din dirabonon. Now, beta pras is a field in which there was a kever, there was a grave that was plowed around, and therefore we're afraid that this grave that was there, the bones and the body that was there were spread amongst the whole field. Now, the worry over here now is since the body broke apart after it was plowed, that you're going to have what's called an etzem kisse ora. That's what we're really worried about. We're worried about small pieces of bone that are spread out over the entire field. Now, a small piece of bone can be metameh b'magal b'masa. Magal isn't coming into contact with it. Masa is if you carry it or you move it. There are two ways you come to me. You will not become to me tumat ohel, because ohel requires rov minyan, rov binyan, kavad samot, certain minimum standards for becoming tumat ohel, and that we're missing over here. So in terms of walking or going over the field, we're not worried about tumat ohel. That's not the issue here. What we are worried about is tumat maga masa, which is that when you walk in the field, you're either going to come into contact with the bone, or you're going to move a bone by, when you step on that area, you're going to move the bone. That's what we're worried about. So, damar yudam rab, minapeach adam beta pras volech. Person can blow in front of him and then go through the beta pras without a problem. There it's talking about the issue of going for the korban of Pesach, that a person's allowed to do this in order to go to be makrivis korban of Pesach. So what you do is you get down on the ground and you blow. You clear away all the stuff in front of you so you can see what's on the ground. You can be sure there's no bones there. And therefore you can continue to move forward basically in this very slow manner, ensuring that you will not come into contact with any bone or move any bones ahead of you. If you look in Rashi, Rashi says, Miu b'tshuma lo matzi ochil. Even though we allow him to do this for the Korban of Pesach, even though we allow him to do this over here to go be a Dayan, nevertheless, afterwards we classify him as being Tamei l'gavei tshuma. Me'apeach Adam b'beit ha'pras allows the Kohen to get through there without an Isur. That is someone who's going to a Korban Pesach not to be Tamei, but in terms of Chuma, we are Machmir over there and said the Kohen can't eat Chuma. So that'll be the case over here. He never became Tamei. It's just that this process only protects him in terms of being in any violation of any Yisur, or in terms of bringing a Korban Pesach. It does not protect him from not being able to eat Chuma. Since he can't eat the Chuma now, you're going to have to compensate him for that. Now, review the Ba'am Remish made the review the Amar Beit HaPras Shinidash Tor. The other option here is, if it's a well-walked field, if it's a field that has a path through it, that's been heavily pounded down, then what are you worried about? You're worried about a bone that was there, that's already been trampled into the ground. You're worried about Masai, you're worried about moving the bone. Since it's well walked over, the ground is now hardened, and even if you walk on the ground, you're not going to move anything, you're not going to shift anything. So therefore, that's the equivalent of blowing through the field is the equivalent if you have a walked over path, a heavily walked over path. Inami, the easiest answer to this question is, Bishar Tumot Dolo Mizar Alayu. It's talking about Tumah that he's not Nizar enough. A Kohen is only Nizar al Tumat Amet. Kohen cannot become Tamet Tumat Amet. That's where he's restricted from becoming Tamet Tumat Amet. If he becomes Tamet Tumat Asheret, there's no restriction against him becoming Tamet Tumat Asheret. So that could be the situation over here. If he becomes Tamet Tumat Asheret, so there's no violation, but he can't eat Tumah now. So that's what you have to replace for him. Then you have to compensate him, replace for him his ability to eat. But that's fine. Again, that's a compensation for loss. That's not a compensation for services. And then we said at the end that he can get paid like a poel. Tana kipoel batel. He gets paid like a poel batel. We have to explain this word. Poel batel shoto melacha. He has to be paid like an unemployed worker of that work. This turns out to be a three-way machlok between the Rach, the Rashi, and the Tosafot over here. How do you pay this person? Rashi says the batel imenu. So if this person was a nokev magaliot, this guy had an easy job, he was a diamond cutter. Diamond cutter gets paid a lot of money, not a lot of work, not a lot of heavy duty exertion, and he makes a lot of money. You're going to ask him now to come and do this dayanut. So he's giving up his easy job and he's come to do this. So we say to him, maybe take a little bit off. You should deduct a little bit from his normal salary because this is a little less work than his normal nokev magaliot. So he doesn't have to work, here he only has to use his mind, he has to focus on the case, but it's not as much as his normal work. So how much would a person be willing to give up their job of cutting diamonds, instead to sit and be a dayan? So that's what you pay him. You pay him that reduced salary, what someone would be willing to take as compensation in order to give up their work. And what happens if he's a schlepper, and his job is usually to carry around heavy things and to work very hard, and now you tell him, you know, instead you can sit here and be a dayan. So for him, there's even people would pay more money, meaning that people would be willing to give up more of their salary in order to have a job where he would sit all day and be a dayan, versus where he'd be working and schlepping and working very hard physically each day. And therefore, you'd pay him less in that case, because it's worth more to him to be the dayan than it is for the one who's being the okay margil, the diamond cutter. So the way Rashi describes here, the difference is, kepol batel sholto malacha, means it's based on your normal trader profession. Your normal trading profession, we look at and say, how much would you be willing to take as a discount in order not to go to work today, but rather come and be a dayan? And that's what you'll pay him. You'll pay him the discounted salary. So it'll be more for someone who has an easy job. It'll be less for someone who has a harder job, because people will be more willing to do this job of dayan versus a hard job. And therefore, you could pay them less for that, because they're getting a benefit as well. The less benefit they get, the more you're going to have to compensate them to make them up for their salary. That's the way Rashi learns it. The Rabbeinu Chananel suggests over here, Perush, Kobel Vatel, Kyagon Adam Batel, She'enu Motze Mishias Kirenu. It's talking about someone who's unemployed, who can't find anybody to hire him. Valechu Batel, and he would be otherwise unemployed. V'yemistaker Bekal, and if you hired him, he would take lower compensation than normal. V'loiten lo kmosha Paulim Ochim Akshav, Shem Biyoker, Kerharbe Maskirin. Don't go by a normal person who's out there who has a regular job who's getting paid at a full salary. Don't base the amount that you're paying him on a full salaried worker. Base them on an unemployed worker. Here's an unemployed worker who's desperate for work, and he'd be willing to take the work at a much lower salary because he just has nothing to work. He has no opportunities right now. He's unemployed. And so you have that whenever there's high unemployment, people are willing to take jobs at lower compensation, at lower salaries. So that's what the Rabbeinu Chananel says. What's means kaboa batel? Not like a normal worker in the field who gets a full salary, but like someone who's unemployed who'd be willing to take this work at a bigger discount. You pay him at that discounted rate. So that's the way the Rabbeinu Chananel describes Paul Batel. Tosfot, on the other hand, gives the final, but his is the most extreme explanation. I mean, according to Rashi, you get the differential between what your normal salary is and what you would take to do this instead of going to work. Rabbeinu Chananel is saying you take it as a person who is a desperate worker in this field and you pay him like that. And Tosafot says, Kipol Batel literally means Kipol Batel. So he says, Alma Korile Pol Batel Mashma Legamre. That means Pol Batel means Legamre. You are Batel Legamre from work. This is someone who's doing absolutely nothing. You have to pay him like someone who is Boel Batel. How much would somebody be willing to take to sit home idly? Come in the morning, you say to this person, listen, instead of going to work today, I want to give you the day off. It's a vacation day for you. How much in compensation would a person be willing to take versus going to work that day? Are they willing, if they could stay home and do whatever they want instead of going to work today, how much a discount on their salary would they take? So that's the amount that you would compensate this individual. The person who says you get paid the most is Rashi. Rashi says you get paid the differential between your normal work and doing this work. The amount that you would give up for going from your normal work to this, they're going to pay you that amount, which is how much discount you'd be willing to take. Pay you, if you were willing, made 100 shekel a day, and instead of going to work and working hard, you can do this job as a judge. So depending on whether your work is really hard or your work is pretty easy, if you're a diamond cutter, we'll say, listen, I would take 80 shekel not to go to work today and do this job instead, then you'll get paid 80 shekel. If the guy was a schlepper and he got 100 shekel a day, and now he can be a judge and sit around, he has to work so hard, maybe he would take 60 and that would be his salary. On the other hand, Tosfot says, your salary is based on a Paul Batel, not on whether how much I would have gotten paid now, how much would you be willing to do this judging job? It's how much would you willing be to take to sit home and do absolutely nothing? So over there, maybe it was 100 shekel salary. He said, listen, instead of going to work today, you take a vacation day. How much can I pay you instead of going to work and you'll be having a vacation day? The guy said, oh, I'll take 60. I'll take 40. That'll be his salary. Meaning that's the way we term the salary. And Rabbeinu Chananel says it's a case of a person who's unemployed. Most poalim get paid 100 shekel a day. This poal, he's unemployed, he's willing to take work at 50 shekel a day. Because he just needs something. He needs some form of parnosa. So that's what you're paying based on that. Those are the three ways to look at what a poel batel is. Over here, Machloket Rashi, Tosafot, and Rabbeinu Chananel. Right, this also has major implications. Again, in terms of compensation for people who teach and people in chinuch, what you raised before is, what is their alternative? Meaning that here it's clear that the compensation is based on their alternative ability to earn a salary. And as you said before, they have no other training. They have no other skill set. So without that other skill set, it's hard to argue that they should get money like the Gebul Batel. The argument that is laid out and is made is exactly what you were saying is the problem, is that these people forewent the ability to be trained in other professions in order to do this. And therefore, that was part of the decision. Part of that decision process to forego other professions is the giving up of the ability to earn in other professions. So there are some who makpid. I had once had a Rebbe in Shalavim who went to college. He went to Machon Leif in order to earn to a degree so that he could get paid, like Skar Batola. That when he got compensated for teaching Torah, it was really that he had an alternative. And therefore, that would be real Skar Batola. Then I'm saying that, I could have done something else. He could have done something else. He had another profession underhand. And that's why he could get paid for it. Next Mishnah. A chashud ala b'chorot in luchim imenu basar tzvayim. Someone is chashud to put mumim into a b'chor and then sell them or then give them away. You're not allowed to buy from him meat of deer because it looks the same. We're going to see that in the Gemara in a second. They have reddish tint to the meat. It looks the same as the meat of cows, so therefore you can't differentiate. And you can't buy from him unworked or untanned skins. You can buy from him female skins because they're obviously not bechorot. You're not allowed to buy from him wool, whether it's processed or unprocessed. You can take from him spun wool or that which is made into clothing already. So now we'll discuss, break down each of these things. Besides Vayim, why can't you buy from him deer meat? It gets mixed up with cow meat because they both have this reddish tint to them, therefore we don't allow it. You can't buy from him unworked, untanned skins. Sounds from this that if he did work the skins and he put the effort in, that you wouldn't be able to purchase from him. So, he says, the reason we do this is because if it really was a Bechor, he would not expend the effort or the investment to do it. Because he would say, Ishamu be Rabbanan mafsuduli minai. The Rabbanan get wind of this, they're gonna put a knas on me, they're gonna take it away from me. So what we assume is, if he's trafficking in illegal contraband, then he's going to put the least amount of investment into it, because he's afraid of getting caught. If he gets caught, all of his investment is lost. So therefore, you can't buy from him things that have no investment in them, because if he puts nothing into it, he says, what do I have to lose over here? The worst I lose is just this item. So therefore, you can't buy that from him. But if he already puts effort into and expends effort on it, for instance here, where he works the skins, which was a big undertaking and a big investment, then he wouldn't have invested it knowing there's a possibility to get caught. So now he won't, if he already did that, we know it's not a bechor. You know for sure that it's not a bechor. Tanakama, imkein, zachar, nami chayik lezuchute. No, he says, what are you going to do? You can take a male skin, and he'll cut it out to look like a female skin. V'amar, akbarim, aklu. And he'll say, why does it look like it's cut over here? Yeah, the mice got to it. It just happens to be in that area where the male genitalia are. That's where they bit. They bit right over there. But that's why it's cut. V'idach, be'akbarim, idiyoto. People know the difference between being chewed up by akbarim and being cut. So according to the Tanakhama, he says, it could be mizayeh if he could create male skins to look like female skins. Rabbi Eliezer says that it'll be obvious. Well, no, when he's trying to forge, when he's creating these forgeries over here, and that he's making the male skins into female skins, and therefore we're not worried about that case. You can't buy from him, whether it's clean or dirty tzemer. Hashtat tzemer meluban lo zmeinan. Here where he cleaned it, you can't buy for him tzoi mi bai. In the case where he didn't clean it, then you have to tell me about it. Elachadik tani. It's really one thing. Tzemer meluban mitzoato. Wool that has been cleaned from its dirt, you can't buy from him. It's not that you can't, obviously if you can't buy cleaned wool, you can't buy unclean wool because they put no effort into it. If here where you put an effort into it, you can't buy it. Certainly we put no effort into it, then you can't buy it. So it's one thing, which is that if he cleaned it from the tzoi, we still don't allow you to buy it. That's not enough of an undertaking investment in order to stop him from doing this to a bechor. If you can buy from him spun wool, then of course you can buy begadim. Tevi is one of the processes in order to make a beged. So you need shua tevi nose to make the strings, and then you make it into a beged. So if you have a beged, obviously you pass through the process of tevi. So Mar says, my begadim namti. It's talking about felt. It's talking about pressed wool. Case where it wasn't spun, it was pressed together like a felt, And therefore, he didn't go through the process of Tevi, and that's what it's talking about in Bigadim. Alright, next Mishnah. A chashur al shvi'it. Someone is chashur al shvi'it, en lochimenu pishtan. You can't buy flax from him. Vafilu sarak. Even if it's combed flax. Avalochimem tevi va'agid. You can buy from him spun and woven flax. Hashto tevi zavnina and arig mi boi. Again, over here, where you can't buy from him spun wool, arig mi boi, you have to talk about woven. So my arig, tiki. Tiki in some places is a loose stitch, something that is not well done. And over here, Rashi seems to translate it as a braided chains. Chains of braided pishtan, again, that didn't go through the process of tevi. And therefore, you have something arig, which is different, or a different process than that of tevi. And therefore, you didn't have to, that if you have arig, you automatically went through tevi. It's here, arig is a separate category from tevi, because that's another way of bringing the flax together without having a base spun. Okay, next Mishnah. Chashud, liyot mocher truma l'shum chulin. Person who is chashud for selling truma and saying that it's really chulin. Ein lo chemen o afilu maim u'melach. You can't even buy water or salt for him. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Shidomer kol sheyesh bo zikat truma masrot ein lo chemenu. You only can't buy from him things that have a connection to trumot or masrot. But if it's something like maim u'melach, which have no connection to truma or masrot whatsoever, then you can buy it from him because there's no chashash over there. Gemara says, what is he coming to include over here? When he says, zikat, what's zikat, trumot masrot? So he's coming to kirvei dagim. He's coming to include the innards of the fish, some sort of fish hash, fish mixture. Demarvei bu shemen zayit, because they mix in it olive oil in it. So therefore, that has a zikat shemen. The shemen is problematic in terms of trumot, and since it's mixed into this fish hash, therefore, the fish hash becomes problematic for you to buy, even though fish hash, at first glance, would not be considered to be problematic. You wouldn't think it was an issue at all, because there's no trumot masrot. It's water, it's fish, so it doesn't have trumot masrot. But because it makes thin shemen zayit, that does make, raise the issue of a problem. Kau tabcho, tabchosho de zvune tarva de atma bimar de kanto. So the butcher was choshud to sell tarva de atma, as Rashi says, chilev aklayot, the fats on the klayot, which are surim, bimar, and that's the gears of the Reino Tam, is mar is bechiluf shel. Mar means in exchange for, mean that he claimed that these were not the fats of the kidneys, but rather they were mar de kanto. Kanto is a fat that is mutar. It's the fats that are around the hind area, but the fats that are mutar in that area. So he used to sell the fats over the kidneys, which were sur, but he would say that it was the mutar fat. So can't say Rava lizvune afilu embuze. Rava is konesim that you can't even buy nuts from him. Similar Papa the Rava, come on, who are you holding like? Ki Rabbi Yehuda, you holding like Rabbi Yehuda? Ki Rabbi Yehuda afilu maim amelach. So why, if you're gonna hold like Rabbi Yehuda, you have to go all the way to the end. Don't buy anything from him. Water, salt. What is this thing with the nuts? Why are you only answering the nuts? The olam, it must be that you hold like Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon, be isura gufe kansinanay. Rabbi Shimon says the only time we're konesim, or only thing we answer on him is things that involve the isra that he's trafficking in. We don't extend it beyond that, so why are you getting involved in nuts? He's dealing in fats. Where it says, stam dardake garubam gozi. Children are drawn to nuts. Gemara talks about this in other places, that storekeepers used to give out nuts in order to attract the children to their stores, to have them buy there. It was a way to drum up sales. It was the advertising of their day. It was the sales or the coupons of those days used to give out nuts. So what does this person do? What does this butcher do? He used to give out nuts. Va'azul meshabed ibnei tabchei. So what do? He would mess up the children of the other butchers. V'garilu bem gozi. He used to attract them with nuts. He used to give out nuts, and the children of the other butchers used to come to him because he was giving out nuts. And he used to say, I'll give you nuts if you bring me your father's fats that are asurim. His father has to throw those fats out because they're asurim. So he says to the kids, listen, if you bring me your father's fats that he throws out, the kid goes, oh, what do you mean? I'll bring you the garbage, my father's garbage, no problem. So he brings it over to him, and he was giving them nuts. So he's basically paying them to steal from their parents the fats that were asurim. Masavi le b'mar dekanta. And then he would sell it as kosher fats. So that was the problem over here. He was using the nuts. That was his vehicle. That was his way of getting the usher fats. Is that he used nuts. So that's why Rabbi Usher had nuts with him. Is that he shouldn't have the nuts anymore. He shouldn't be a nut seller. He shouldn't have nuts with him. Because he got his contraband by using nuts to pay off the kids. who were stealing it from their fathers, the butchers. So Rabbah, in order to stop that, said, no more nuts from this guy, as well as the fats that you can't buy from him. Okay, we'll stop over here.